For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, it's Fraser from Unbreak My Chart. Just a quick note to explain that we recorded most of this week's podcast before Glastonbury, including our hot off the presses response to the Artist for Grenfell single, which had only just come out. I'll be back flying solo at the end for the latest top 10, but in the meantime, here are the songs of the summer. Welcome to Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that tapes the top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. I'm Fraser McAlpine.
And I'm Laura Snapes. And we have so much to get through this week that we're going to dive straight into the week's agenda. Well, namely, the Grenfell single, Lorde's album, and the song of the summer. Let's do this. So, first things, the Grenfell charity single, which, if people have been living in a hole this week, a number of artists, put together by Simon Cowell, have covered Bridge Over Troubled Water to raise money for the victims and the people affected by the terrible apartment block fire in West London. At that conference that I went to in Seattle earlier this year, the writer and chart analyst Chris Malamphy gave this great presentation about the All-Star charity single, kind of dealing mostly with Do They Know It's Christmas Time and We Are The World. And he talked about how those are the only two kind of All-Star pile-ups that have really aged very well, and how self-serving many of the ones that came afterwards are, as are the two originals, really. And recent attempts to make singles like this in the US and the UK have been really massive flops. It seemed like a format whose cultural currency is long expired. But I think this one, it seems like the first one that's going to have some kind of significant impact. I don't know that it's going to stick around the charts for ages because it's summer and this is a big weighty ballad, but I wouldn't be surprised if this is straight to number one this week and several more weeks after that. What do you reckon, Fraser?
It's a really inspired choice. I've always been a real sucker for those songs that you play in a crisis. The songs where the first verse is, if you're down, when you're sad, if life's treating you unkind, if you don't know what to do because you are in a mood, and then the chorus goes, here I am, I'm your mate. So there's Bridge Over Troubled Water, or obviously there's Lean On Me by Bill Withers, there's Call On Me, Everybody Hurts, You've Got A Friend, you know, all those sorts of songs. I'm such a massive sucker for those anyway, and I think most people are. I think it's a lovely sentiment, is that just keep this song tucked away in your back pocket for dark times and we'll play it. Also, because it does have that showboating element to it, it does lend itself well to lots of people taking a line each and really singing the flipping heck out of each one of their lines, which, you know, has its pros and cons. But if it's Simon Cowell and he's like, no, we need to demonstrate full emotional commitment to the moment, this is what we're going to do. It doesn't necessarily mean it's artistically satisfying. That does not matter at all. But if you were to view it on those sorts of terms, sometimes you'll find, just as with Bono's line in Do They Know It's Christmas, well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you. It's a line that is really hardcore, but he delivered it in such a way that was like, wow, that guy can really sing. He's really good at the singing. And he's surrounded by what was then the acme of singing ability. And this is where being older than you helps. I was around at the time and was startled by how good it was. I was around at the time and already liked you too and was startled by how good that line was. So there's that sort of potential there as well. Although I think everybody's largely agreed on who the real star of the song is, and it's not actually a sung moment, is it?
No, it's not Rita Ora giving it her all, putting, you know, the one hand on the cans and like a soulful look into the microphone. It's definitely Stormzy's rap, which opens the song, and I think we should listen to it now.
Yeah, I don't know where to begin, so I'll start by saying I refuse to forget you. I refuse to be silenced. I refuse to neglect you. That's for every last soul up in Grenfell, even though I've never even met you. Cause that could have been my mum's house. Or that could have been my nephew. Now that could have been me up there, waving my white plain tee up there, with my friends on the ground trying to see up there. I just hope that you rest and you're free up there. I can't feel your pain, but it's still where it is. Went to the block just to chill with the kids. Troubled waters come running past. I'ma be right there just to build when you a bridge, yo.
So it brings an old song that we've long grown weary of thanks to X Factor covers right up to date. And the thing that I really like about his verse is that there's kind of an uncertainty and a helplessness to it that feels entirely appropriate for the occasion. It's not swaggering in with answers or any kind of saviour complex. It's not gauche, like saying, thank God tonight, thank God it's them instead of you. You know, when he says, as for every last soul up in Grenfell, even though I've never met you, that could be my mum's house. I don't know that we've ever heard a line like that on a charity single before. Probably because they're usually about such distant tragedies that it would be gauche for anybody to make such a parallel with the crisis they're singing about. But I think that particular line really underlines why he's become the voice of a generation this year.
Oh, absolutely. And bearing in mind that this is a guy that came out and it was, you know, his lyrics were shut up and essentially I'm the very best and you are all completely worthless. His ability to show that kind of vulnerability and to drop his guard is remarkable and always a delight to see, you know, in an ever growing grime scene, maybe, which is, you know, it's a very macho scene. And, you know, this is not our natural area to talk about, but maybe this is a key sign of development within grime, is that you can start to say, but also we're not that macho. Sometimes we are really, really emotionally connected to something, and this is a moment like that. But you can contrast it with Dizzy Rascal's guest verse in Band Aid 3, which felt extraordinarily tacked on and kind of, and he's not, I mean, we had Dizzy Rascal last week as my most listened song of the week. He's not a bad rapper. He knows how to write, but it still felt like, in the midst of all this festive jollity, it felt weird, whereas Stormzy owns the beginning of that song.
I have to say, I don't know that I totally agree about the idea of like grime being a really macho thing, because on Stormzy's album there's kind of the more sung moments, like the gospel moments, which I don't know how effective they are. I don't think they're as effective as this verse on this song. But one thing, you know, I think one of the reasons why it really makes sense for him to be on this record, as well as the fact that he's one of the hugest pop stars in the country and maybe the world at the moment, is the pastoral air of grime, in a way. I know that's putting a really wanky word on something that's much more kind of grassroots than that, but although I might not listen to a lot of the music that comes out of that scene, I really admire the way that its biggest voices are very proactive about talking about depression, especially among young men, and poverty and politics, which I think we've seen a lot with the Grime for Corbyn thing, and then also in the aftermath of the Grenfell Fire, rappers of like Akala speaking out. But yes, I have like nothing but good things to say about this.
And also, it's easy to be cynical about Simon Cowell's involvement, as if there's some kind of self-aggrandizement involved. I mean, it essentially doesn't matter if it's true or not, because it's not necessarily an invalid viewpoint, but if there's one thing he is really good at, it's emotionally manipulating people into handing over cold hard cash. And you couldn't argue, you know, that this is definitely a thing that people should be handing over cold hard cash for. I think that the subtext of the Chris Malamphy piece was that actually people could hand over cold hard cash anyway and they wouldn't have to buy the single or get involved with an artistic expression in order to do that. And I think those people are doing that. But I have no objection to it being a media continuation of a story which is going to dominate the year news-wise, which does seem to underline who the heroes and villains are in this particular situation and who are the people that need the help. Because the first thing that certain aspects of the media do is try and make people who are victims seem like they deserve it. And I think to have a single that says, no, these are people that need help, is a remarkably strong rebuttal of that view.
I absolutely agree. I mean, obviously there's been a huge amount of outrage about what's happened, and rightly so, but I feel like for a lot of people and a lot of more right-leaning media commentators, there is the kind of opinion and assumption that it doesn't really matter and it happened to other people, it's not something that affects them. And I think that, like you're saying about Simon Cowell, one thing that a song like this can do is kind of drive home that emotional resonance. And the vast array of musicians who are on it, they all speak to a slightly different subsects of society. You know, their fandoms are lots of different ages and from lots of different backgrounds. And I think this is one of those instances where something that is obviously very tragic, some people may think, well, that doesn't apply to me. I don't really have any feelings about this. A song like this can kind of reinforce the fact that, no, actually, this didn't just happen to these however many hundred people who lived in this tower. This is something important that all of society should care about.
Well, ultimately, everybody is at the mercy of the local councils, their own local councils' planning ability and restrictions. And some of those restrictions will have been enforced by cuts that were brought in place by the government, and some of it will have been that particular administration's own political leanings. And although you may not live somewhere where there are tower blocks, you definitely live places where there are roads, and if those roads aren't kept up because of political reasons and to do with the infrastructure, then that could also have its own safety knock-on effect. So in a way, it is a universal thing. Again, we've talked about this before about being proud taxpayers. I know this is becoming enormously political, but if you pay that money in, any money in whatsoever, into the system, then you have to expect that the system will not kill you. Now, one of the things that we were unable to talk about last week, and I think Laura has a lot to say about this, is that Lord's album is finally out. And as we know, Laura's been following her progress very intently, and I'm not that far behind her. But the question we all need to ask is this the pop album of the summer? So, Laura, you have thoughts, and I'd like to hear them now.
Yeah, well, it's weird. I've probably spent as much time reading about the album as I actually have listening to it, because I've been travelling and away for various reasons, work things, and I've had, like, other things to listen to and write about. So I wasn't binging on it over the weekend, but I was binging on people's writing about it. And amidst all of the, like, really sharp insight that I read, and actually in the show notes we'll list some of my favourite pieces, because there was so much great writing about this record. One thing that's really struck me is that there is a lot more discussion of the words than the music, because Lord is very good at lyrics, but I do think that means that we should start by talking about how it sounds, particularly in the context of current pop. And one comparison that I have seen a lot with this album is Robin, and I have to say I really don't get that from it whatsoever. The best Robin songs, which is obviously most of them, are simultaneously euphoric and heartbreaking, and they sound totally straightforward with sentiments like "dancing on my own," "call your girlfriend," while actually containing incredibly nuanced emotions. And I think Lord's songs on Melodrama are for the most part just a bit too intricate and too weird to tap into those qualities, or very occasionally a bit too generic to reach those kinds of highs. I think the places where she's at her most distinctive as a writer is on the slow songs, and my favourite tracks on this by miles are Liability, which we've heard before, and Writer in the Dark, one song where she's doing Bowie and the other where she's basically doing Kate Bush, but bringing them to life with her really, really distinctive vocals. On Liability, she sounds kind of crumpled up as she sings this lullaby to herself, and then on Writer in the Dark, she sounds so weird and idiosyncratic in this performance that perfectly channels the lyrics, the idea that, like, you know, her ex is too stupid to know what he's missing out on, but that he should also be absolutely terrified of her. Which I think is a great sentiment for a pop song to contain.
Yeah, the sequencing of the album feels odd to me, in that Liability just stops everything. It's like they pull the wheels off of the motion of what she's singing about. So there's loads of songs that appear to be trying to encapsulate a certain teenage mindset and teenage hedonism, or, you know, but also looking at Lord pointing at herself while she's looking at it, while she's singing about it. And then suddenly Liability just seems remarkably uncluttered and very, very heartfelt and direct. And it feels like a last hurrah. It feels like the end of... So if you were to say that the whole of Melodrama was some form of crazy wild night out, then Liability would definitely be the end. It would be the getting back to your room, sighing plaintively to yourself because your adventure is over, and you don't even really know how it's changed you. That's how I would have sequenced it, because ultimately the problem you have is, if you have a song that's as good as Liability, even if the rest of the songs are all really good, there is just this sudden spike in astonishment in the whole album that is difficult to reach for the rest of it.
I agree. I think that song is totally startling. Other people's highlights, which seem pretty consistent across all of the reviews I read, are The Louvre and Supercut. And I think the words for both of these are great, more of which in a second, but I'm not quite as sold on the music. They're really, I mean, it's really, really good and it works in context, but I just find both songs a little bit middling. I either want more outlandishness or more of an impact. But then I suppose, kind of like you're saying, Melodrama has been written as a whole album, with the kind of narrative conceit of it following the trace of a single night out. So I'm sure for that reason it'll probably do better in the album's charts than it's fared in the singles chart, which hasn't done very well at all in the US or the UK. And these songs do work in context. But contrary to my argument, out of context, here here is a bit of The Louvre. I think progresses, I call and you come through, blow all my friendships to sit in hell with you, but we're the greatest, they'll hang us in the Louvre, down the back, but who cares, still the Louvre. Okay, I know that you are not my type, still I fall, I'm just a sucker, let you fill her mind, but what about love, nothing wrong with it. This song contains some of my favourite lyrics on the album, which has got many, many great lyrics on it overall. I really like where she sings, "They'll hang us in the Louvre, down the back, but who cares, it's the Louvre." A sentiment which has been slightly undercut for me since learning that it may be about her briefly dating Diplo, which would like destroy some of the romance of these songs. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. But mind you, I mean, ultimately, I guess in that scenario, would you put yourself as being Lord or Diplo? Like, if you, because presumably you would have to be thinking about which one of the couple you are. And I've never stood a chance of being Diplo. So I'm like, well, whoever Lord goes out is fine with me, if she's happy or whatever. But would you then have to go out with Diplo? Is that the problem? Or do you just don't want those two together?
No. It's more just like, it bothers me when you have a really great song that you really want to get into, but then you learn that the person that it's written about is somebody that you're not particularly into, and you're like, oh, it just changes it a bit now. It's not so much that they went out, or I imagine myself being one or the other. It's like such a beautiful sentiment wasted on such a non-person. But that's very trashy and not good pop criticism. But yes, the lyrics, like Liability and Writer in the Dark, they're both sentiments I can get behind. And I kind of like that vindictive, sprite-like bit in Loveless, tacked onto the end of Hard Feelings, where she's going, bet you want to rip my heart out, guess you're going to skip my calls now, guess what, I like it, in this really demonic little child voice. Like, the idea that ripping your heart out and skipping her calls are equally big things in the eyes of a 20-year-old, with kind of the knowing hyperbole that you apply to emotions at that age, but also the utter serious with which you perceive like texts and calls and stuff. And I like the way that she sings about rushing a lot throughout the album, and danger, the idea that every tryst, every night out could end in utter catastrophe. But there is a level of self-consciousness to some of the lyrics that pushes me out of the songs as soon as they've lured me inside, which I think is something you feel as well, right, Fraser?
Yeah, it's the one thing I spotted quite early doors was there was a lot of, we're going out, we're going to get trashed. Look at me writing about how we're going to go out and get trashed. Look at me making a song about writing about how we're going to go out and get trashed. And all the framing devices seem to build up. And it's like, I don't need the DVD commentary on the song. I just need the song. Can you just get to the point? Make the point. And I don't know that I particularly like... There's a sense of the universal we that you find in a lot of columnist writing. We need to do this. We do this. We. And there's something of that in the way that she's talking about the teenage experience. Is like, I sort of... It's at one and the same time a really valuable insight into a life that I no longer lead, but also it speaks to a universality that I'm not convinced exists. So there's this twin thing of going, really? Does everyone? Or are all teenagers just out there being, you know, so clever about this? Or are you just, because you're the writer, you're spotting it, but you're also pointing at yourself as the writer while you're writing about it? And ultimately, thinking about that pulls me out of the song. And that's what makes it slightly off-putting, no matter how giddy the songs are. And some of them, you know, like you said, she does share with Kate Bush that kind of total commitment to what she's singing about, even when it's slightly odd, or maybe because it's slightly odd, no one else would ever do that. And there's a kind of self-congratulation in that. There's a point at which you're kind of, I want to just go with her and trust that she knows what she's doing. So at that point, I don't want her looking down and going, God, look how high up we are. We could totally fall, but we're not going to. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I picked out a few lines like that. Broadcast the boom, boom, boom and make them all dance to it, which is about, you know, how she's turning the nervous arrhythmia of her heart into pop songs. And when she sings, I guess we're partying. And also, I'm 19 and I'm on fire. Like, one of the things that makes Lord such a good writer, especially about teenage life, is that she is simultaneously aware of the ridiculousness and the fleeting nature of it while she is in the middle of it. She can zoom in and out in that way. But on this album, something that I didn't get from Pure Heroine, like the debut album, is this sense of her talking to camera to make that knowing quality really, really clear. Like, in the same way that Taylor Swift's songs come with the understanding that, of course, she was always going to write about what's happening them, you can see the pen moving across the paper. And in some sense, I think that's one of the ways that she deals with being a public figure on this record, which was something that I was really curious about how she was going to pull off. And again, with Swift, there's the idea that you're constantly 100% aware of who's singing these songs as you're listening to them. There are still a lot of relatable ideas, but they've got Lorde's name running right through the middle of them. And when I hear her, you know, channeling Bowie and channeling Kate Bush, it makes me wish that she was a bit more inclined towards the kind of abstraction and characterization in their songs, because you were always totally clear about who was singing their material because they were so distinctive, but it didn't mean that the music had to be so directly about them. There's no mystique, I suppose, in a Lorde song. I mean, there is in some ways, but in other ways, there's really not. And yeah, she is by no means literal, but listening to Melodrama reminds me of when you watch a film that should be really good, but you can't quite stop thinking, oh, that's that famous actor, rather than actually buying into the story that they're trying to tell you. Which I know that sounds really critical, but I do really like this album, and I think she's brilliant, and I think she will go on to do much better things than this, even though I think it's great already. Yeah, I think when you're into something to that extent, you become a bit more kind of hypersensitive to what you perceive as its flaws.
And also, let's not forget, she was someone who was seized upon by David Bowie as being a key talent, and David Bowie is someone who often put framing devices, or seemed to be acting out a framing device within his own songs, and people didn't worry too much about whether David Bowie was authentic, because what he was parlaying always was, this is what I'm into now, this is where I'm going now, and not, this is what I've always been like, which is the, so it's, you know, it's a pop attitude rather than the rock attitude, which is, you know, I was born to be a bluesman and I will be a bluesman until I die. So it's entirely legitimate in a way that she does put these framing devices about. Also David Byrne does it as well. It's just a question of whether you are allowing that to drive the emotion of the song, and that's where I think, as with any good pop album that contains that kind of artifice in it, it's going to take a lot of listening and a lot more sinking in to really bed down. Because ultimately, there will be a point where you will get that stuff won't put you off anymore. You will get carried away by the emotion. And actually, the fact that she's alongside you, winking at you while you are carried away by the emotion, is sort of another giddy thrill. But you've got to get through the first 25 listens of the whole album to get to that bit.
Yeah, and also, like I was saying at the beginning, I've read so much about this that I just feel a bit kind of smothered by all the ideas and writing about it, and so I've not really had the opportunity to just experience it as a pure pop rush yet, which I am really looking forward to. Do you reckon it could be the pop album of the year?
It stands a good chance. I wouldn't put it past the Paramore album to sneak up on me slightly more, because they are so excited about making pop music, and that's always a slightly more palpable thrill for me than someone being excited about themselves making pop music within their own songs. But I mean, yeah, it's great. It's a really good album.
I buy music in different formats depending on where I'm going to listen to it. So because my record player is in the living room, it's a very specific type of record that I buy for it. And the same with CDs. I buy CDs for the car, and both Paramore and Lorde have made it into my car CD rotation. So I'm going to see how they bear out over some summer playing.
That's perfect. You should do some kind of chart as to how long certain albums have lasted in your car. We'll do that at the end of the year, Laura's car chart.
Nina Cherry's War Like Sushi is having a good lot of spins at the moment. I can't remember what else has been in there. John, who people heard on last week's Unbreak My Chart, likes to clear out my CDs because otherwise the car just becomes a travelling rubbish bin.
Nina Cherry's Roar Like Sushi is a fantastic album.
Yes, and good for the car as well, because it's so punchy that it kind of cuts through the sound of the engine.
Okay, let's move on to the song of the summer. Now, we'll make no apologies for the fact that this is going to be one long list of read out emails with people nominating their particular songs of the summer, because that's exactly what we asked for and it's exactly what we wanted. We want there to be a broader commentary around what people are really, really enjoying now the weather has perked up. But before we really get into that, what do we think makes a song of the summer, Laura? Is it a sonic thing, or is it just a purely coincidental, circumstantial thing?
I think it's a number of reasons. First things first, I think it has to be catchy in a way, whether it's kind of low-key catchy like Despacito or high-octane catchy like Katy Perry's California Girls. It kind of has to be suited to hot weather and floating out of windows, and it has to have an air of excitement, but maybe also kind of an undercurrent of lethargy, because as we are experiencing right now, nobody can survive in this heat. If you can hear birds on this week's Unbreak My Chart podcast, it's because we both got the window open so we didn't die mid-recording. Similarly, it should be euphoric, but it should have an air of nostalgia or melancholy to it, I think, because there is no season as fleeting as summer. I always think the rest of the year just seems kind of like a mediocre green miasma, but summer is very in your face. And it has to work on the radio, but as Despacito shows, I think it doesn't have to be a new track. But the time of year for releasing is an interesting point, I think.
Yeah, my friend Tom texted me. Hi, Tom. And he said, don't you think history would be rewritten if either Pharrell's Happy, Bruno Mars' Uptown Funk, or maybe even Ed Sheeran's Shape of You had been released slightly later in the year than they were, because they were all January, February hits. And it's weird because those songs would be released in winter when they're perfect summer songs. And I think there's something to be said for that, actually, that Shape of You has trailed the summer in a really interesting way. It started to become the build-up of summer because it's part of the Trop House thing, and yet it's not. And this summer has had an extended drum roll introduction, and that has been Ed Sheeran's Shape of You.
Yes, now continuing, of course, picking up the baton in Liam Payne's Strip That Down.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about picking up batons with regards to Liam Payne, because I don't know what the baton is made of. Is it a meat baton?
We should get into everybody's songs of the summer. Thank you so much to everybody who emailed in. We did have a few duplicates, so we can't read out all of them, but this is the broadest spread we could get to in the amount of time that we have. So, Fraser, without further ado, do you want to kick off?
Yes, this is an email from Henry Barnes. He says, can I offer Paramore's Hard Times as a song of the summer and the following waffle as to why? I'm 33, a dad, and about to have my second. At the time he wrote the email, that child was due tomorrow, so I can only hope congratulations are in order. We've not heard back from Henry since, so I presume everything went well. And if it did, hearty congratulations. Would you consider calling your child Top 10? It's rare that pop... he continues. That was just me. It's rare that pop makes me happy in the way that it used to. I think that's partly because I'm depressed and or tired all the time. Remember, he's a father. And partly because I'm not the target audience anymore. And partly because the world's wobbled off into a darker place than most pop artists are willing to tangle with. And he cites as a reference Harry Styles's, it's about everything. He says, I tend to like angry music and find pop's self-aggrandizing blah too much to stomach, but I love Paramore. They write songs that make anger, tiredness and depression catchy. Inside the Tigger Bounce of their latest single is a playful anguish that only the perfectly all right but dissatisfied anyway can get away with. Let's hear a clip of it. He continues, their latest album, After Laughter, bundles this strange and not entirely rational unhappiness up in 80s pop. It's a wonderful twist, the music that fueled an era of growth and greed, returning to comment on the damage all that caused. Henry, that is such a lovely point. And on at the basis level, the most important level really, I can dance to it with my toddler. So that's from Henry. Laura, you have the next email.
Yes, this is from Elizabeth Sandercock. She says, these are not interesting or surprising choices, but I think my two contenders for Song of the Summer are Carly Rae Jepsen's Cut to the Feeling and Niall Horan's Slow Hands. Cut to the Feeling just makes me feel glittery and dancey, and Slow Hands is good for those nights when you've had just a bit too much sangria. I also wanted to add that I really agreed with Laura's thoughts on Slow Hands on this week's shows. It's got just enough natural sexiness that doesn't feel try hard, but it's a bit surprising because who saw this coming from Niall Horan, One Direction's most giggly member? It also reminded me of this great piece by Zach Ramanoff in Mel, which we will link to in the show notes, about Niall Horan and Zayn Malik and how race plays into their growing maturity slash sexiness is viewed.
It's a really great piece, which brilliantly refers to the video to Pillow Talk by Zayn Malik as being a very, in open speech marks, I'm in art school now and I'll do what I want, Mum, moment. But it does highlight the fact that Zayn's musical choices were entirely curtailed by his sort of pop racial profile, and in a way that Niall could, you know, make any kind of music that he wanted to, but Zayn was always going to be the sex R&B man. It's a really well argued piece and I'd urge you to read it. On to an email from Harry Lindsay. He says, my pick for the summer so far is Big Fish by Vince Staples. The great G-funk beat provides an undeniable summer bop that I can already imagine being blasted out of cars parked outside supermarkets as the inevitable barbecue shop takes place. And Vince charismatically delivers a well-constructed and entirely clean pair of verses.
Another story of a young black man trying to make it up out that gym. Goddamn, back, let me make my bands. Got plans, if you hatin', don't shake my hand. Take it easy, homie. Reminiscing, sitting in that Benz of the 22 bus stop way back when with the 22 five shot eyes on scan for the click, clack, clap or the boop, bop, bam, cut.
In a time when hip-hop appears to only infiltrate the charts in the form of seemingly infinite, crude and manufactured Quavo features, this song offers an enjoyable alternative to the attempted hip-hop song of the summer that the likes of DJ Khaled and co provide. A lyrical, G-funk, clean rap song is a blessing that we and mainstream radio should celebrate this summer.
This is an email from Ellie Chalkley. She says, Laura was talking about feeling despondent about everything she was listening to in one recent episode. I know that feeling. I ended up chucking out my existing everyday slightly grim muso playlist and putting 15 hours worth of inspirational up-tempo pop bangers into the shuffle. It worked a treat. I have my song of the summer though, Gimme Gimme by Inna.
Hang out with my girls in Nevada. Caliente, baby, looking for fun. No rush, but just don't make it harder. We both know that you really wanna.
Gimme, 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 gimme that love. Gimme, 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 gimme that love. I'ma love you, love you long time. So gimme, gimme the way.
To be honest, it's a bit of a racket, she continues. A global grab bag of musical styles and some slightly dodgy lyrical references, but it iterates sufficiently on the whole 110 BPM world pop trop house thing to be interesting. Also very good for chair dancing in the office.
And I have an email from Kate Brower. She says, my song of the summer is Ray Black's Doing Me. First of all, I love Ray Black. Her voice is a gorgeous mix of rough and smooth and the alternation of positive spoken word verses with a sung bridge and la-la heavy chorus is summer in song form.
Two cents inside your pocket.
I'm just doing me. I'm just doing me, 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 me. Why don't you do you? That's what you should do,
This is a genuinely non-judgmental, aspirational, feminist pop song that's about the small details rather than the big picture. As Black says, she's got nothing to prove, but then neither do you. Its sunny outlook captures those moments in summer where things genuinely feel idyllic, like an upturned face basking in the sun. What a gem.
Amazing. This is from Kieran Devlin. He says, song of the summer for me is Lorde's Supercut, which we have already discussed. Eminently danceable, struttable, luminescent with glee and possibility in life, love and pop music. And it's palpably authentic. Oh, that's a dirty word. We should have caught that one before. Here's a bit of that.
In your car, the radio up. We keep trying to talk about us. Slow motion, I'm watching our love. I'll be your quiet afternoon crush. Be your violent overnight rush. Make you crazy over my touch. But it's just a super cut of us. Super cut of us. Oh, it's just a super cut of us.
He says, as you both stressed, so much of the current chart crop is pillared by calculated cynicism, by deviations into Afrobeat, South African EDM, reggaeton, etc. Not because of creative curiosity, but because it makes convenient branding sense. Yet melodrama, and Supercut particularly, is self-evidently Lorde, from the smoke-tinged thrust of the production to the cathartic exuberance with which she describes first love.
Cool. This is an email from Sean Michaels. I don't know if I've yet heard my definitive song of summer 2017. It's one of those years where different singles will cater to different temperatures and humidities, different shades of light. Passion fruit tinted evenings, mask off afternoons, perfume geniuses die for you as steam sweats on the windows. Sorry, moment of applause for that. But and yet, however, there's one ravishing Canadian single that's already swinging and swooping through my sweltering June, repainting the walls and watering the flowers. It's psychedelic country music. It's rinky-dink glam. It's smart and dumb and it's wonderfully too short. I suspect it hasn't crossed the Atlantic to you. It deserves to be in your mix. I hope you like it. It is Daniel Romano's Ugly Human Heart, Part 2. Please let us hear this masterpiece.
Scattered on the floor, the oil's too thin and always dripping wet like, hey.
That was an amazing email. This is one from Natalie Lodi. She says, my personal pick is from Major Lazer's new EP. Firstly, Major Lazer are great at both getting that summer essence in some of their songs, like Lean On, and collaborating with up-and-coming artists. In the EP, they've collaborated with veterans like Sean Paul, but also newer people like Quavo, who we can't seem to escape. The whole EP is quite a Latino influence, with one song in Spanish and the other in Portuguese, which potentially shows how perhaps artists are trying to capture what made Despacito so popular. I feel like the EP might be followed by an actual single that could get that summer feeling. From the EP itself, I think Particular, I hope I said that right, is a good contender for a summer song, as it does have a similar sound to songs in the charts and quite a cheery vibe. In particular, I enjoy Jidenna's part, as I'm a fan of his song Classic Man, and I think he is growing in popularity. This is Particular.
I like you, girl, in particular. You in particular. Say, I like your waist in particular. Say, I like you, girl, in particular. Yeah. You in particular. Say, I like your waist in particular.
So, that was your suggestions, and instead of picking our most streamed songs of the week, we're going to pick our prospective songs of the summer for ourselves. And maybe in September we'll come back to see whether we predicted our own favourite songs correctly. Although, when we get to my choice, I think most people are going to guess that it's unlikely that anything's going to shift it, because you'll never guess, Unbreak My Chart listeners, but I've gone with Bad Liar by Selena Gomez. It's not that I've only heard one song this year. I seem to be one of the very few people for whom it's an immaculate pop moment. People aren't talking about it the way they're talking about the Lorde album. People aren't listening to it. It just about dribbled into the lower reaches of the top 40 because the video came out. And that's a video that people were talking about in a way of, oh, look, Selena Gomez is playing more than one character in her own video. That's interesting, isn't it? No, it's a really good song. Listen to the flipping song, you strange people. And it's so impeccable. And it deserves so much better. So I'm slightly defending it as if it's one of my own children that got pushed to the back during auditions for Harry Potter. And also, I feel that it is the song that I'm going to continue to listen to for the whole of the summer, because I don't really get to hear it anywhere else. Let's hear a snippet now, because it's my podcast and I'm allowed to do that.
Oh, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, oh, trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, not to think about you. No, 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 not to think about you. No, 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 I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, oh, trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, I'm trying, not to give in to you. No, 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 not to give in to you.
I think we should just say that Fraser accidentally just unplugged his own headphones in excitement at Bad Liar by Selena Gomez.
I don't know what else I need to
do. He tried to cut that out, but I think it must go on the record.
I don't know what else I need to do to underline how good this song is. What's wrong with you all? I do at least have...
I'm gonna download it and put it on my iPod.
Good. But you said you were going to do that weeks ago. Mark Savage.
I've been very busy.
Oh, so I hear. No, let's not have a domestic on the podcast. Mark Savage, BBC Entertainment News' reporter, has this. Who was tweeting about the song, and somebody who, an Unbreak My Chart listener, sort of copied me in on the tweet and said, "You see, somebody else likes that song that you like." And Mark said Mark said, "I've been trying to come up with an alternative suggestion for the podcast song of the summer list, but no, this is the one song of the year for him as well." So it's basically me and Mark Savage stick all of you in a game of my song is the best. What I will say is that I also had reason to change my mind recently about Haim, because Little of Your Love came out and I'm totally sold about that. I was talking to Anna from Brazil, another one of our listeners, about Training Wheels rock music, which is the kind of soft edge rock that serves as an attractive introduction to rock music for beginners or young people or children. She was referring to acts like Counting Crows and the New Radicals and people who sort of suggest that the kind of sonic terrain of rock without actually being, you know, as scary as rock music can be. and suggesting those kind of bands are less prevalent in the music mainstream these days. But Little of Your Love by Haim is exactly in that mold. It's both sweetly melodic, supremely confident, sort of part Motown, part Bruce Springsteen. And it's also riddled with this kind of rude squeaks and guitar stabs and oddly left in parts that only rock music of supreme confidence would actually bother to not get rid of. And best of all, it's a warm song. It's a warm song in cold times. Even though the weather is hot, everything seems cold and a little bit scary. To have a song that is so happy and sure of itself, that's to me a fairly decent definition of a summer banger as well, is that it just reminds you that there are good things in life. And let's have a little section of that right now.
You're so close now,
I agree. One of my favourite things about this song, I mean, among all the great things about it is so sure of itself. When you listen to I was writing about Haim recently, so I dug quite deep into their lyrics. And on their first album, you can see confidence kind of coming out, but they're still like mentally in a headspace where they're maybe like slightly blaming other people for feeling a bit sad, or they're letting themselves be toyed around by useless boys. But the distinctive thing about the lyrics on the new Haim album, which I can tell you is very good, is there's no nonsense. There's no messing around anymore. And Little of Your Love is one of those songs. It's them saying like, come on, what are you playing at? Why would you not want to be with me? I'm great. And I think it has everything that's great about Haim in one song. Somebody pointed out recently, which I think is a great point, is that I read a discussion online where somebody was saying that they don't really like the way that Danielle sings because it's too percussive. They can't kind of cling onto her choruses, and they're not, you know, traditionally melodically catchy. But then somebody else chimed in and said, well, actually, the thing is, all of Haim at heart are drummers, and Danielle more than either of them. You know, they were raised by their dad, who was a muso, who got them all playing drums as their first instrument when they were tiny kids. And so it totally makes sense that she would have that really percussive rat-a-tat kind of quality to her singing, which, yeah, that detail just made me like them even more.
That's an astonishing piece of... Yeah, that's great. I've just been quietly thinking about it because I always liked her voice. Not always been sold on the songs, but her voice is, it has that thing that Laura Marling's voice sometimes has, which is just sounds like a much older person, much more experienced person. And I hadn't picked up on how quickly her syllables are jammed together, because when she's good, when the lyrics are really good, it just seems like that's the appropriate thing that she needs to sing at that moment, which is always great, because there are... I mean, I was listening to the new Ride album in the week, and the thing with Ride is they're absolutely bog-awful at writing lyrics. They've always been terrible at writing lyrics, and they just fill the melodic spaces with words that mean very little and very loosely fit the flow of the melody that they've already written. So you don't get the sense of someone saying something and they had to say it and they've made the melody fit the words, or, you know, it isn't that. It isn't a joyful collaboration between the stresses of a melody and the stresses of actual words. It's just, we need stuff to go in here, this will do. And I think that's why I'd never thought about it, but it makes total sense. If she's thinking about things in very rhythmic terms, then, you know, the beginning of that chorus in Little of Your Love is a beautiful little drum fill into this repetitive section, which just goes round and round and round. And how confident are they to bring in a chorus into a song that often and just go, no, this is it, this is what we're doing now, we're staying with this chorus. You know, there'll be little bits and bobs where we pull in, we pull out, we'll put in more noises, we'll withdraw that noise, but essentially this is what the song does from now onwards. Here we go, and it's glorious.
So this brings us seamlessly onto another band who do that interesting kind of linguistic thing, using words as a tool to fit them in rather than necessarily say something, is the French band Phoenix. One of my very favourite things in the world is Phoenix, the four suave international French hotties with a knack for making exactly the best kind of blank flirty pop song for you to project onto. And one of my other very favourite things in the world is ice cream. And if I was only allowed to eat one type of food for the rest of time, it would be ice cream. I dream about ice cream. I've had a problem with ice cream in the summer. Last summer there may have been a period where I was eating four magnums a day and an intervention had to be staged. And so I'm on top of it now. But imagine, actually, it wasn't Magnums as well. It was Ben and Jerry's ice cream sandwiches. Those things are so good.
Can I just before we go any further with this, I'm exactly the same, but mine is marmalade. I'm not allowed marmalade in the house because if we have marmalade in the house, then there's no marmalade because I've eaten all the marmalade.
Do you spoon it out the jar into your mouth?
I don't, but I eat a lot of toast. I go through so much toast, and I'm not exactly sparing with it when I ladle it on either. But it's like, how much marmalade do you like on your toast? I like all the marmalade on the toast. I'm going to eat some more marmalade. I'm basically Paddington Bear when it comes to marmalade.
Would you like toast with your marmalade?
Yeah, no, completely. It's so yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Go back to your metaphor about ice cream.
Oh my God, it's not even a metaphor. Imagine my delight when I discovered that the new Phoenix album, Ti Amo, which is Italian for I Love You, I think, is a concept album about ice cream.
Whoa.
I know. It's like, okay, so imagine if the Beatles had made some songs about marmalade, that would clearly be your favourite thing in the world. Like, the only better things I can imagine are The National making an album about how much they love the films Father of the Bride 1 and 2, or Tegan and Sarah singing about swimming in the sea. I mean, the Phoenix album is not tightly conceptualised. They kind of planned it around a mood board of ice cream, but there are a few more obviously ice cream themed songs, of which Tutti Frutti is one. I just wanted to read something from a recent profile of Phoenix by the writer Jeremy Gordon, who I think really nails their allure. He says, "The best Phoenix songs have a mysterious warmth to them. It can't be explained by the guitar tone or the lyrical cleverness. They make you feel like you're at a party where everyone is dressed extremely well and dancing with just the right level of spontaneous commitment. And to your surprise, so are you. So why not enjoy the vibe and see what happens?" That is great. I think this band are really, really hard to write about. I find it very hard to distill the pure pleasure hit that I get from them, but I think that piece does it really, really well.
You know what kind of party it is? It's the kind of party where they serve jelly and ice cream.
Oh, I don't like jelly, but I will just have the ice cream part. That's fine. So that has been our Songs of the Summer run through. If you think that we've missed any brutally obvious ones or any pop up as the summer months roll on, then please do send them our way to unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com, or you can argue with us on Twitter at CSIPopMusic and at Laura Snapes. We probably won't do a full episode of it again, but we'll dip them in now and then when a big one comes up. And a lot of people have been asking on Twitter. Several weeks ago, I mentioned that I had heard the Song of the Summer, but I wasn't allowed to talk to it. And it still hasn't come out yet, but I think it's out in early July, so we might have to revisit the theme to talk about that. Right then, Fraser, I'm off to Glastonbury, so I'm going to leave the chart in your very capable hands.
Okay, so let's do the top 10 on my own. Number 10 is Power by Little Mix. Who got the power? And number 9, I'm the One by DJ Khaled featuring Justin Bieber, Quavo, Chance the Rapper and Lil Wayne. I'm the one. I'm the only one. I'm the one. I'm the only one. Okay though. At number 8, To You by David Guetta featuring Justin Bieber. Take both of our souls and intertwine when it comes. At number 7, One Last Time by Ariana Grande. Number 6, Mama by Jonas Blue featuring William Singh. At number 5, Unforgettable by French Montana featuring Swae Lee. number 4, Strip That Down by Liam Payne featuring Quavo.
You know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me, baby. Now there's a lot of people in the crowd, but only you can dance with me. So put your hands on my body and swing that crown for me, baby. You know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And number 3, Wild Thoughts by DJ Khaled featuring Rihanna, which is a new entry, and I think we will probably come back to this in future podcasts, so stay tuned.
I know I get wild, wild, wild. Wild, wild, wild thoughts. Wild, wild, wild. When I with you, all I get is wild thoughts. Wild, wild, wild. When I with you, all I get is wild thoughts.
And number 2, Despacito by Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee featuring Justin Bieber.
Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
And at number 1, Bridge Over Troubled Water by Artists for Grenfell. And that's the top 10. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Unbreak My Chart. If you've anything you'd like to discuss about chart music, please contact us at unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. If you want to listen to any of the songs we've discussed in this week's podcast, we've put the best ones in our rolling Spotify playlist, which is, as ever, linked to in the show notes. We'd also love it if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts, and just want to say thank you to anybody that's already done that. We've been thoroughly enjoying reading your comments and will indeed be implementing some of the constructive criticisms in future podcasts, so watch out for that. And you can find us both on Twitter. Laura is at Laura Snapes, and I'm at CSI_popmusic. See you next week!